all gonna die here. These are cops.
Oh, they're cops, you piece of shit.
At least something I never told you about me. I hate fucking cops.
You know, I think what they really mean is they have nothing to say. Yeah, I forgot which band did that, but it's been quite a while ago. Yeah, we got a request today, this morning, on the 9th of October, 2015, from one of our Lone Wolf called Stray Dog. So let's listen to this little, I think, an Irish ditty here.
I'm a weaver, a Calton weaver. I'm a rash and a robin lay. I've got silver in my pocket, and I follow the robin fray. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, oh. As I went down through Glasgow City, Nancy Whiskey I chanced to smell. I went in, sat down beside her. 7 long years I loved her well. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy Whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, oh. The more I kissed her, the more I loved her. The more I kissed her, the more she smiled. Soon I forgot my mother's teaching. Nancy soon had me beguiled. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, oh.
Now I rose early in the morning to slack my thirst, it was my need. I tried to rise, but I was not able. Nancy had me by the knees.
Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, oh.
So I'm going back to the Calton weaving. I'll surely make them shuttles fly. For I made more at the Calton weaving than ever I did in the roving way.
Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy.
White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana. And looks like we're going to get some rain today. And how about that rain down on the East Coast? Wow. Weather changing or whatever. Or maybe it's just a phase we're going through. But you know, it's funny, all those Republicans down there, those senators and congressmen in the Carolinas and down there, they all voted against federal aid for New Jersey when New Jersey had their big problem a couple of years ago, or maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So now, all of a sudden, they're crying for federal help. Very interesting, isn't it? These are all Republicans denying aid to the people, and especially the working people of New Jersey. Yeah. And so now the shoe's on the other foot. I'd say deny them any aid but they're going to hurt a lot of good white people that shouldn't be hurt. Or maybe if it wakes up these people to what bastards they've got representing them, maybe this is a wake-up call that they need. You know, Lindsey Graham and all those guys, they're all for war. They're all for sending troops over into the Middle East. They're all for spending half of the gross national product on weapons. So I don't have any kind of sympathy for those guys at all. And I think Graham Cracker there is married to an Asian, one of those guys down there in the Deep South, married to an Asian. Sort of interesting. And I think she's Chinese, too, so maybe he was feathering his nest. Well, we remember we were talking about the housing being bought up by foreigners that are, a lot of them are fleeing their country to put their money in the states where they think it might be safe, because these countries around the world, their GNP is dropping like a rock, but also the drug cartels are involved. That's something that hardly anybody seems to be talking about. They're laundering their money through buying of real estate. In the wake of the market recovery from the last real estate crash of 2007-2008, developers have been once again trying to lure low-earning Americans into buying homes and condos facilitated by very small, in some cases, 3% down payments, with the idea to increase domestic demand. But this scheme seems not to be working so well anymore. The domestic wherewithal and therefore demand for purchasing real estate seems to be waning. Reality company Zillow Group reportedly recently that 30% of the homes lost value over the last year. This is in concert with another recent report about the falling bear market in lumber. And that's probably because we're shipping all the lumber to China. And the latest Google consumer survey showing approximately 62% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings accounts. Not quite enough to go out and buy a house. However, in stark contrast, demand for homes in select urban areas, get that, urban areas such as San Francisco, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Miami, where prices appreciated from 6.1% to 10.4% within the year, it is an oddity that needs explaining. It doesn't need explaining. The Chinese unusually high appreciation of the aforementioned urban centers is due to the ever-growing influx of foreign buyers, mostly wealthy Chinese, who view American residential real estate as their safest investment commodity. According to a National Realtors Association survey, the Chinese spent $22 billion on U.S. housing in 12 months through March 2014. 72% more than they spent the year before. They buy mostly high-end expensive homes with a median price of over $500,000. Chinese foreign buyers account for almost half of the sales to foreign, that's to other foreign buyers such as Canadians, British, Indians, and Mexicans. At first glance, foreign investment may seem to be a welcome boost to the economy, but a very disturbing second thought comes to mind. Rapid depletion of affordable housing for the middle-class Americans, color them white. Notwithstanding its present economic woes, China produces legions of multimillionaires who almost as a rule prefer to invest their money in residential properties outside their country, mostly in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Even at their economy's reduced annual growth rate of 5% or 6%, given their enormous population of 1.4 billion, a large number of wealthy individuals will continue to emerge from China and continue to buy into American residential properties for years to come. Duh. The same can be said for emerging wealthy buyers from India, whose population is close to 1.3 billion. By allowing foreign buyers to buy American homes in large numbers, affordability of housing for American middle-class citizens is only going to further erode, eventually to the point of them not being able to afford homes in their own country. Some would argue that the foreign buying of American homes cannot do much harm, as foreigners cannot take the brick and mortar back to their own countries. they can take the cash back. While this holds true insofar as foreigners buying commercial real estate and investing in other types of commercial enterprises, buying too many residential homes will soon put them in a position to dictate American home and rental prices, notwithstanding periodic real estate corrections. And of course, they'll be dictating politics too. You keep seem to forget that. You get a lot of money, own a lot of property, you control legislators, you buy them as always. Eventually, the trend will spread to other cities due to foreign demand. Don't forget they're buying up agricultural land like mad, too. In fact, they have whole busloads of Chinese touring around the heartland looking for choice acreage to buy up. Even worse may happen when the next market correction occurs. As properties lose their values, there may likely be a much stronger secondary wave of foreign demand that could snap up American homes at an even faster pace, creating a very serious problem of affordability for middle-class Americans. In other words, into the street, boys and girls, into the streets, into the back of your cars, into your vans, because you're going to be living in them. So you better buy a nice van and a big car. The only way to truly remedy this potential threat is to either severely restrict or otherwise exclude foreigners from buying American homes. Oh my God, that would be racist. We couldn't do that. This would pave the way for domestic supply and demand to become an exclusively American issue, where the prices of residential properties would adjust in line with American citizens' affordability factors. Well, it's too late now, because these guys, billionaires, have been given citizenship now, massive numbers of them. They're here to stay. And so what are you going to do, Whitey? What are you going to do? While encouraging foreign buyers to invest in the U.S. economy is of vital importance to the country, oh yeah? Where did that come from? National Chamber of Commerce, of course. Allowing them to buy residential real estate or farms, and then they get control of the agriculture, and thus they will control the food in large numbers, may turn into a disaster. Well, it's already looking like a disaster to me, you know. The unchecked and rampant buying of American residential properties by foreigners, mostly non-white foreigners, is indeed a sword that cuts both ways. On one hand, the country temporarily benefits by the influx of foreign capital that goes into the pockets of the banks and the politicians. On the other, middle-class American buyers end up unable to keep pace with the ever-increasing prices. Guess where they're going to go? As the property prices go up, the rental prices go up, and the job prices go down. There hasn't been any significant labor raises for 30 years. I strongly believe that in the absence of foreign buying, the construction industry would still continue to be viable as older homes, apartments, and condominiums need constant upgrades. The industry would also continue to cater to new housing startups, this time encouraged by Americans who can afford them, albeit at least expensive price tags. The only difference would result in developers making less profits along the way. And we got to make massive profits, you know that. That's the name of the game. That's all there is, profits. If the American government doesn't take serious proactive measures to ensure that cost of sheltering for Americans becomes an exclusively domestic affair, there's a good possibility where in a not-so-distant future, foreigners may become major landlords of the U.S. homes, dictating their prices and rentals. Well, they're doing it already, dumb shit. Effectively, they'll be in a position to hold Americans at ransom in their own country. Well, that's the way it's going, and of course, I've been talking about this for years. I remember talking about these rich Chinese and other people buying up property in the United States for a long time, and that is going towards creating these housing bubbles around these big cities. And if something major happens, that bubble could pop, and down goes the economy real quick, like 2007 and 2008. That's the name of the game. Prepare for being peasants, boys and girls. There's no other way of looking at it. The white race is going to become peasants unless you suck up to the rich. Well, let's see what's going on back in the Pessimist's Guide to History, taken back to the 3rd century. War destroys library in Alexandria, Egypt. That's when the Christians destroyed a wealth of historical information that afflicts us even to this day. The things that were destroyed in that library could have put us ahead 1,000 years. The most famous research library and museum in antiquity was destroyed during a civil war late in the 3rd century A.D., founded in the year 290 B.C. by Ptolemy Soter and maintained by a succession of Ptolemies. The library contained nearly 750,000 volumes of scientific knowledge, all known Greek literature and translations from other languages. Although damaged by fire in 47 BC when Julius Caesar besieged the city, the central library had remained intact. A daughter library established in about 235 BC in the temple of Serapis was later destroyed by the Christians in AD 390. The destruction of these libraries eradicated most of the knowledge that had been accumulated over the centuries. This loss and the political and social upheavals that followed plunged the Western world into the Dark Ages, and another reason to hate Christianity and all the Abrahamic religions. I mean, that's Judaism, the Muslims, and Christianity. I mean, for that act alone, they deserve to be eliminated. So when Christians cry to you about, well, you insult us and you call us names, the son of a bitches deserve it. And here we go again with the Black Plague, 250 to 265 A.D., I believe that is. Plague strikes the Roman Empire. At the height of this plague, deaths in Rome numbered 500 per day. And before it ended, much of the empire was depopulated, Mother Nature keeping population growth under control again. Now that's interesting. If the native Romans were mostly depopulated, who took their place? 365 AD, earthquake shakes Alexandria. Dawn had just broken over the magnificent city and seaport of Alexandria on July 21st when a furious thunder and lightning erupted. The disturbance in the sky probably awakened many living in the city, located near the mouth of the Nile River in Egypt. Then, with only that warning, the whole city suddenly started to shake. Historian Ammianus and Marcellinus describe the quake as a horrible phenomenon, such as are related to us neither in fable nor in truthful history. The whole of the firm and solid earth was shaken and trembled. Indeed, much of the Roman Empire was being shaken at that very moment. Tremors were later reported to have occurred in Sicily, Greece, Egypt, Dalmatia, and modern-day Yugoslavia. In Alexandria, people shaken from their sleep raced into the streets as buildings trembled and threatened to collapse. Suddenly, the ground became still, and the panicked citizens experienced a moment of calm. But Alexandrians out along the waterfront noticed something very strange taking place. The sea was fast disappearing, pulling back as though receding after a massive wave. Suddenly, the seafloor all the way out beyond the great port of Alexandria lay exposed. Marcellinus wrote that the abyss of the deep thus revealed, men saw many kinds of sea creatures stuck fast in the slime, and vast mountains and deep valleys, which nature, the Creator, had hidden in the unplumbed depths, first saw the beams of the sun. Apparently the quake's epicenter lay beneath the sea and had violently disturbed the Mediterranean waters. Knowing none of this, amazed Alexandrians rushed out into the exposed seabed, grabbing fish with their hands. Then they heard the roar as the sea returned in a massive tidal wave hurtling towards the shore so rapidly that there was no time for anyone to escape. The wave struck Alexandria with astonishing force. Saint Jerome wrote that it seemed as though God was threatening a second deluge, or all things were returning to the original chaos, unquote. As the enormous wave rushed into the city, buildings crumbled and were washed away into the sea. The streets of Alexandria flooded for miles inland. Some ships riding the onrushing waves crashed into the tops of buildings 2 miles away from the shore. Some 50,000 people were drowned or crushed by the collapsing buildings. Bodies floated everywhere. The tidal wave threatened many other coastal areas around the Mediterranean, though some were spared. At Epidaurus in Greece, the people ran to the monk Saint Hilarion for protection when the earthquake struck. What a waste of time. He is said to have looked out over the sea as a tremendous wave approached. He marked the signs of the cross 3 times in the sand and lifted his hands toward the wave, and then it withdrew and spared the town. Oh, these guys will use any trick of Mother Nature to feather their cap, and leave it to the religious fanatics. Well, like the book says, the good old days, they weren't as good as you think. Yeah. Well, our friend Stray Dog sent me a little documentary here from Kai Myros, and I believe he's a Swede or a Norwegian or Denmark or one of those places up there. He's excellent. He does excellent work, so I'm going to play this for you.
This is war. Make no mistake about it. This is the most ferocious and merciless war our planet has ever seen. This is a relentless war of survival, a bitter struggle over living space and natural resources. In this war, races and civilizations clash, and in the final analysis, what is truly at stake is none other than world domination. This war is fought every day, and it affects every aspect of our lives. This war is fought in the media, as our elite pollutes our minds with shameless lies, trying to make us accept unconditional surrender in the face of rampant masses swarming to Europe. This war is fought in the academic world, as the malicious, perverted intellectuals who preach self-hatred and guilt are seducing us to welcome death and extinction in order to make room for the ever-swirling masses of hostile aliens. This war is fought in the realm of global economy, as the parasitical capitalist upper class and its managerial lackeys force us to embrace unemployment, poverty and death as progress, only so that these shysters can keep on stealing our national wealth and enrich themselves at our expense. This war is fought into bloody confrontations in our streets and town squares as our people are being attacked by gangs of predatory immigrants waging an open race war against us. This war is fought throughout our life as we are constantly bombarded by the growing demands of the new economy, new society and the new world order. This war may have escaped the attention of the liberals. The leftists may deny that there is any war at all. But this war is a gruesome reality that affects us all, whether we accept to see it or not. Those who think they don't have to get involved, who believe that they can turn their back to all this, pretend that nothing is happening and stay neutral, are already in this mess, just as deep as the rest of us. This war is fought at every level of our existence. And should we lose, the result would be the total destruction of European civilization, an unprecedented collapse of everything that can be perceived as normal and decent life. New dark ages with no hope nor salvation in sight. We have become victims of our success. The Industrial Revolution and the Scientific Revolution, both initiated by the ingenious European race, have now turned against us. They have spread into the developing world and opened the Pandora's box of population explosion. Now, as a result, we have to deal with mass immigration, ecological crisis, the depletion of natural resources, crime and chaos in unprecedented scale. Our success made us lazy, complacent and naive. We lost the ability to understand and accept the harsh realities of life. We refuse to see facts as they are and choose to believe in comforting fairy tales. And when we do crash into the true reality, we nurse ourselves with the sweet lies our elites overlooking offers us. But the truth is that our entire life has become a battlefield, and at this moment, we are still losing. We have become slaves of the monsters we created. Capitalism, industrialization, and scientific revolution have now morphed into multinational corporations, finance conglomerations, and secretive globalist organizations that have taken over our societies. Within our lifetime closes the great cycle in history, the cycle which started in the 14th century when Europeans embarked on the great explorations overseas, started to unravel the mysteries of nature at the epoch of European dominance began. We conquered the world, and now the world, the third world, is about to conquer us. This is indeed an unprecedented constellation in European history, something we haven't experienced in centuries. During the last few decades, we've come face to face with the fact that we are not on top of the global food chain anymore. The hunters have now become the hunted. Those who used to dominate are now being dominated. We are not masters of our fate anymore. However, this dramatic fall from grace is not necessarily a bad thing at all. This new situation is the long-needed rude awakening to the harsh realities of life. This new situation forces us to rethink our priorities and rediscover those qualities that made us so powerful in the past. This new situation challenges us to refine and strengthen our competitive edge, train the flapping muscles of our civilization, to plan, to scheme, and to conspire. As a result, we will learn to pool our resources, synchronize our action, sharpen our wits, and organize ourselves to such a degree that when we finally make our decisive move in this great game, we will act as one, and we will strike with such force and move with such speed that the world will hold its breath. We will surprise our enemies, and we will surprise ourselves. After we have made our move, the world will not be the same anymore. The evolutionary struggle between civilizations is far from over, and if there is one thing absolutely certain in this world, it is that Europe will not perish. And all this we will achieve together. After our former power and glory has disappeared, all we have left is each other. So as you can see, Europe's current plight only works in our favor. Facing death and destruction together will unite us in a way that has not yet seen in our long history. How could anyone defeat Europe when we, for the first time in history, stand together? As pan-Europeans, we will not waste our time in arguing over the correct borders of some ancient feudal territories. As pan-Europeans, we will not waste our energy in reliving ancient ethnic conflicts that have somehow managed to survive to this day. as pan-Europeans who refuse to be dragged down to the level of petty chauvinistic squabbles that for so long have sapped Europe's powers. Whatever happened in the past stays in the past. We refuse to be slaves of the past. As we rediscover our strength, we will turn our gaze upon our enemies, and we will come to the realization that indeed they are rather bigger fish to fry in this world than our past squabbles. Maybe it were now thinking that perhaps Europeans are already too civilized to fight for the place on this planet. Maybe you are thinking that perhaps the Europeans have already become too pacified to defend their rights. But I can assure you, even if 100 million Europeans refuse to take arms and defend their land, life and honor, we will always find 1 million who are determined to do so. And that, my friends, is more than enough to keep this process going and take it to its cataclysmic, brutal and victorious conclusion. The irony is that when we finally get the Europeans to fight, we have already won the war. And this is because our biggest enemy, in the end, is not the alien world occupying our streets, but our unwillingness to do anything about it. Once we have helped our people to cross this psychological threshold, very soon they will be ready to do anything to drive out the enemy. And that is what we have been waiting for. The deciding battle of this war will be fought in the hearts and minds of the European people. We are dreamers and visionaries, while the liberals have become tired and scared. The liberals have lost the ability to dream and to evoke great emotions. All the liberals can do is to administer this ever-growing misery and desperately cling on to the remnants of their waning power. All that the liberals have left is the past and the crumbling illusion of being in control. All the liberals can give to people is threats. Threats of what will happen if people do not obey and yield to the demands of the elite. Liberals try to scare people, telling how they will suffer if they do not bow down before the rapacious institutions of global capitalism. Liberals try to shock people, telling how they will suffer if they do not surrender themselves completely and unconditionally to the forces of international finance. What the liberals fail to see is that our people are already suffering. And whatever they do, they will suffer even more in the future. All the liberals have in store for our people is more and more suffering, an endless cycle of suffering. Liberals warn people that if they turn their backs to the ever so wise elite and take no heed of its sound advice, a chaos will be unleashed. But what the liberals fail to understand is that we have already reached the point when we welcome the chaos. For us, chaos holds a promise of a new and better world for us. For us, chaos is the dance of Shiva that destroys all that is corrupt, deformed, foul and unfit to live. For us, chaos is a life-breathing force that is needed to recreate and rejuvenate the world. Like the spring follows the winter, new life will take root in the roots of the old world. In nature, there is a season to everything, and now the time has come for the old world to die. Everything will be created anew. Our talented race will build a civilization which has no parallel in human history. We will surpass all our past achievements. Gods themselves will envy us for this opportunity to recreate the world better than ever, to bring into perfection what so long has been imperfect, and to unleash the greatness of our race. Our revolution is only the beginning of our future. The ramifications of our revolution will last for eons. Like a pebble thrown into water, sends ripples to travel across time and space. Our revolution is the beginning of a process that will break the boundaries of time and space. Our idealism and fanatism will be the energy the new world feeds on. Our unyielding will, determination and enthusiasm will transform our dreams into reality. Nothing is impossible to us. We will become masters of our fate. We will learn to know our true nature. We will rediscover our inner self. Tat Tvam Asi, that you are, will now finally become absolutely clear to us. Our dreams are nightmares to our enemies. We are believers, and our enemies are left with desperation. We have faith, they will have fear. No matter how the liberals try to deny it, we are already in their nightmares. No matter how they try to resist, deep down they already see their own demise. Uneasiness turns into worry, and worry into full-blown panic. The liberals can already see this path before them. When the liberals try to warn people about us, they always paint a picture of a sinister, relentless and cunning movement, a force of nature for life, that feeds on the turmoil, desperation, anger and hardship the liberals themselves have brought about and cannot cure. In short, the liberals subconsciously already agree that they are the disease and we are the cure. But indeed, terrible things will be done. And that will be our burden and the greatest sacrifice of our generation. The spearhead of our movement will see and do things that cannot be discussed afterwards. Those who know more than others will bear this knowledge in their hearts and carry it into their graves. What must be done will be done so that Europe can live. In the end, seemingly against all odds and to the horror of the powers that be, Europe endures, Europe survives, and Europe triumphs. Europe will be mercilessly purified and purged, and not a stone will be left unturned in order to find the criminals responsible for the debasement of our civilization. In order for Europe to survive, we will take the great lead beyond good and evil. Our conduct cannot be judged by the ethics of the day. Our actions will not be guided by the moral code of a weak and suicidal civilization. In order for Europe to survive, we will plunge into the unknown. We will sail uncharted waters, wrestle with alien gods, and shake the foundations of the earth. Europe's answer to external threats is not defense, but outrageous expansion. We will not sit idly by and wait to be overridden by barbarians. We carry the war into enemy territory. We demand absolute equality to all Europeans. We demand that the honor of the European people will be restored. We demand work, housing, protection of the law, and respect for all Europeans. We do not tolerate that our people do not have enough to eat, that they have to sleep in the streets, that they have no means to take care of their families, and that the liberal elite has denied them the right to a decent and respectable life. We do not tolerate that every day our people are being attacked by wild gangs of alien thugs the liberal elite has invited in. We do not tolerate that our people in their own native countries have to live in fear of foreign career criminals. We do not tolerate that our people, despite of their hospitality and kindness, are still constantly ridiculed, mocked, derided and vilified by malicious and perverse red intellectuals, academic parasites, spiritual enemies of the earth. And all this with the obliging help of the liberal media. It is totally unacceptable that Europeans have become slaves of the global capitalist mafia, that Europeans are being extorted and bled dry by international financial gangsters. It is totally unacceptable that these shameless scam artists have been given the right to take over our lives, steal our jobs, and expropriate our future. We place our hope in the young people of Europe. The new European youth will forsake the obsolete and stifling values they have been force-fed by the decaying society. The new youth will cast off all the wrong teachings, false dogmas, and lies the degenerating system has used to brainwash them. The new youth will create a movement of European fundamentalism. The new youth will ferociously pursue European interests on a world scale. We will not be insulted anymore, we will not be pushed around anymore, and we will not be abused anymore. The new European youth will be impatient, intolerant, and insatiable when it comes to defending Europe's honor. The prime directives for the new European youth will be command and conquer, seek and destroy. We can see it now clearly. This is war. A war of economic and social sabotage against the European people. A war of ethnic cleansing and physical replacement against the European people, and intellectual and emotional blackmail in order to subdue the Europeans. But I can assure you, we refuse to be at the receiving end of the stick for very long anymore. Soon Europe awakes, and when that day comes, then finally, the storm breaks loose.
Oh boy, that was a good one. And Kai Muros has got a lot of excellent videos up on YouTube too. You spell his name K-A-I-M-U-R-R-O-W-S, and done an excellent job. And really, that stuff gives you a lot of hope. It's very positive. But first, we got to go all the way down before we can come back up. That's the thing. And I like his point of view on chaos. That's right. We need chaos now. I know that there's a lot of people, some people out there disagree with me in the struggle, but I believe chaos is our friend, not our enemy. And as you can see, the system is creating more and more chaos. So it's almost a evolutionary fact that it's eating its own tail and destroying itself. So there's not some great thing that you as an individual have to do. But remember, when they start to clean up the thing, save your wrath for those at the top, not so much for those at the bottom. That's an easy cleanup job. But at the top is where your problem is. Sort of like the French Revolution. Now, whether you like it or disagree with it or what, the tactics were beautiful. Truly beautiful. And it was based on a lot of chaos and eliminating from the top down. Try to influence any young white men that you know and women not to go off half-cocked and shoot up a church full of Negroes or things like that, because that does not solve a problem. In fact, that creates more problem. And these people are not controlling the situation. They have even less control than we do. Or maybe neither one of us got any control. That's probably more like it. So don't waste your life in going to prison forever for Mickey Mouse operations. And speaking of those at the top, those are the ones that are escaping taxation here in this country by going offshore. The 500 largest U.S. companies would owe an estimated $620 billion in U.S. taxes were it not for the more than $2.1 trillion in cash that most of the firms hold in foreign tax havens, according to a study released Tuesday. The report, based on an analysis of company filings to the IRS and the Securities and Exchange Commission, was authored by Citizens for Tax Justice and the U.S. Public Interest Research Group Education Fund. Well, I would say it's probably twice that much that's escaping taxes in this country at the top. So these tax havens would seem to me to be a very interesting target. I mean, I don't think it'd take too much of a military force to take down some of these tax havens. They just, I don't think they would be expecting it. I hope maybe ISIS will come over and start knocking off those tax havens. Do something productive besides just chopping heads off. In fact, these tax havens should be the number one target of these Muslims, because in the true rendition of their religion, they don't believe in collecting interest, as actually the Christians used to practice that, no interest. But so we'll see what happens. If you know that some of these guys say, hey, you're going the wrong way, you're doing it all wrong, you got to go where the big boys are at. Just think, these groups like ISIS or whoever, if they had a hardcore few companies of crack shots and sharpshooters, and while the rest of them are going for the bottom, the sharpshooters should be going to the top. But they never seem to get that point. I don't understand it. That's what makes me suspicious of all these movements. They always go to the bottom. They don't go to the top. Or at least rarely do they go to the top. I think there's going to be some big boys in this country going to be scratching where they don't itch, because as they're doing all this bringing of these Muslims from all over the world, there's got to be some of them filtered in here, and that's probably going to be one of their targets. But who knows? Who knows what evil? No. Who knows what good lurks in the hearts of men? Now, here's a list of, I don't know if I gave you this yesterday or not. I don't think so. Here's a list of people who are hiding their funds, not really hardly hiding at all, because they buy off American politicians and European politicians and do it. Apple, your good friend Apple Company, has got $181.1 billion in offshore cash. It's probably twice that much. GE's got $119 billion offshore. And, of course, GE is a really big arms and electronic military company. They're warmongers. Microsoft, $108.3 billion offshore. Pfizer, $74 billion. IBM, $61.4 billion. Merck, $60 billion. Johnson & Johnson, $53.4 billion. Cisco Systems, that's a super big computer outfit, $52.7 billion is offshore. Exxon Mobil, $51 billion. Google, $47.4 billion. Procter & Gamble, $45 billion. And Citigroup, at last, is $43.8 billion. But even as you go down, and they don't even count those people that are hiding $1 billion offshore or $100 million offshore. Do you realize we could rebuild if we could cut the war budget in half or even get rid of it? And last of all, this money that's offshore, we could rebuild this whole country. We could rebuild the railroads. We could build everything. And we could rebuild the sewer systems. I was listening to a guy last night on the radio who said that they had a, I think it was down there in North Carolina or someplace, that sewer structure or something went to hell. And the thing was built in the late 1800 or late 1700s. They did a good job. They lasted a long time, but this infrastructure is not being replaced. Well, bring these sons of bitches to heel that are hiding all this money offshore and all that stuff, and we can rebuild the whole country. But just cut that military industrial complex crap at least in half immediately. Now, do you hear any of these candidates? I haven't heard any of these candidates talking about getting rid of this gigantic military budget. Maybe the boy from Vermont might have. I haven't heard him directly say that. Bernie Sanders. The tame Jew. How about that? I can't wait till this debate between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. If I put my money on Bernie, I think he'll cut her to pieces myself. I'm going to have my popcorn all ready for that one. For an example, on that Apple, which seems to be the top of the list with $181.1 billion offshore, if those profits were taxed at U.S. rates, the company would pay $59.2 billion in taxes. Yeah, and see what about GE and Microsoft hold $119 billion and $108.3 billion in offshore cash holdings. There you go. You want to straighten out this country? Want to rebuild this country? You got to get, if you're going to have candidates do it, they got to be kamikazes and be willing to be sacrificed. But they got to come out against the military-industrial complex, and they got to arrest the CEOs of all these big companies and get that money. Go right into the tax havens and get that money and bring it back here. I'd like to be involved in that. You know, there is a little silver lining on a lot of this immigration out of North Africa. It's not a big deal, but it's there. There's a hell of a lot of white people in the Middle East. If you look at the populations closely, you'll see them all over in all those countries. Iran has got white people all over the place. So not everybody that's fleeing out of there and going into Europe are bad news. So that's one small silver lining to a very dark cloud. Like I've told you before, when I interviewed on my show years ago, the son of Egyptian diplomats They weren't diplomats at the time I interviewed him, but here is this Egyptian. He was over 6 foot tall. He was white as I am, and light eyes and the whole bit. I have no problem with these people. And don't forget, we got millions of co-racists in South America and even Central America, but more in South America. Don't forget those. You see the right wing. I remember when I first started out, they treated whites in South America as orphans or something, or didn't even recognize that they were white. And, of course, that's Hispanic is supposed to be your origins or come from the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal. Not a bunch of swarthy, ragged, crap peasants. I mean, I know people, if you called one of these mestizo little swarthy bastards, if you called him Hispanic in front of a real Hispanic, he'd knock you on your ass. But the right wing has always made that mistake, that, you know, totally American situation. Well, you got to think white. Don't think American. Don't think necessarily European. Don't think Icelandic. Think white. If they're white, they're okay. Unless they get in your give you too much trouble, then they might not be okay. We could have millions more white people on our side if we catered more to the whites of South America. But the ruling class has managed to psychologically lump all the whites in South America and Central America in with the non-whites. And that's a bad thing, a horrible thing. A few years ago, someone sent me sort of a small catalog of pictures of mainly women from Iran. And it was unbelievable how many beautiful white women are in Iran. But they don't want to. See, the average right winger, he's saying, kill them all, you know. He doesn't even recognize there's white people over there.